Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And joining me for this half hour is Chasten Buttigieg. He has written a memoir called I Have Something to Tell You. He is the husband of Pete Buttigieg. And he, of course, just made a huge hit on the presidential circuit this past year. And what a life Chasten himself has. Chasten, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So I have read your book. You probably have found, as you do interviews, that a lot of people get your book, but they don't actually read it. I read it. And so
thank you.
It's only fair. And one of the things I found interesting, by the way, is you're like a farm boy. You're a farm boy who one day finds himself shaking the finger of Barack Obama, apparently by accident, it turned into a handshake.
Yeah, I definitely did not, when I was growing up in northern rural Michigan, did not think that not only would I grow up to marry someone who would run for president, but I would embarrass myself at the White House.
Now, by the way, I have to ask you, at that White House Christmas party, and I've attended White House Hanukkah parties, I collect a lot of presidential stuff, and I couldn't help it. I actually took some forks, which probably isn't legal, so don't tell anybody. But did you take
real
stuff?
Real forks or like plastic forks?
No, they had like real forks. I mean, so I'm going to tell people they belong to like the Truman administration.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, you might have to go to jail now. I think I took the paper napkins that had, you know, the presidential seal, like printed on the paper napkins. I still have a couple of those tucked away.
Oh, please. I took a pack of those. Are you kidding?
You know? Yeah.
So, also, the paper towels, by the way. I don't know if you got those, but those are also very nice if you got into the restroom.
Yeah, and the pillows and the cushions and the toilet paper and whatever else we can stuff in our bags.
You and I would do very well at the White House together. So, one of the things you write is that there's only one star, but the spouse has a role. And again, you came from such an area that didn't set you up for the life you've had. But what is it like walking in the shadow of Pete Buttigieg, but at the same time, really making a name for yourself because there's been so much attention on you as well?
Yeah, that's the confusing part about the role. You know, to be a political spouse, there's no playbook. And everyone sort of does it differently and they do it in their own way. And many people will tell you there's only one star. You know, the candidate should be the only person out front. Don't do anything to distract from the campaign. Right? The campaign is about the candidate. But it's also, you know, there was no way I was just going to stay home and not say anything and not do anything to help Peter. But, you know, you get a lot of conflicting advice. Go home, disappear, stay out of the spotlight, just let him do his thing and win the race. Or, you know, get out there, connect with people, talk to people, help them connect to the race and help them, you know, understand why you love your husband and why he would make a great president. Conflicting advice. And again, you just kind of have to figure out how to do it successfully, but also in a way that isn't going to sink the ship and distract from the candidate or the campaign.
And by the way, you do write a lot in the book about your life with Peter. And you make the point that while it's sort of the public that calls him Pete or Mayor Pete, he's Peter to you. So with your permission, I'd like to call him Peter.
I met him as Peter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Pete is easy to say. I get that. But I also get that Peter is the proper name. So let me just take you back a little bit, because one of the things I love, because I think your name is great. I love the name Chasten. And you tell the story of the fact that your mom thought she was naming you after a character, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, my mom and I will contest this story until the cows come home. She swears that someone she was working with was directing a Christmas play, and there was a character named King Chasten. And I've done some research. I've asked around. I can't find any such Christmas play or any character of King Chasten. But I appreciate the fact that she thinks that it is a royal name.
Well, I think you do talk about the fact in the script there's some reference to King, Chasten thy wife. And so because actually the word Chasten is a Chasten, it means restrain. And that's probably what it was that she was remembering.
Yeah, I think, so to chasten someone, right, is to punish, to restrain. So there's, like, you know, an Arthurian ballad that has that line in it, but I cannot find, like, a character. But either way, I mean, I think it's a really unique name. It's always, like, the first thing people ask me about, you know, when I was in job interviews or whatnot. Everyone wanted to know about the name, which was also a bummer because I never had a really cool story for it. but I appreciate that it's unique.
I'm going with Jess instead of Chasen because it makes it more real. And by the way, I'm assuming a lot of people except your grandma didn't really call you Chassers.
You think they don't accept that?
No, I'm saying, did other people in your life besides your grandma call you Chassers?
Oh, the funny thing is everyone in my family has a different nickname for me. My dad, my mom, my cousins all call me different names, and grandma called me Chassers. I don't think anyone calls me Chasten in my family, and I think I only ever really heard my name when I was in trouble.
Then you get the full name. Hey, so people should know, and they might not know, I think it's fair enough to call you a Chicago boy as well, because you've got a degree from DePaul.
That's true, yeah. I lived there for a few years.
And while here, I mean, through the book, you make references to some of the places people might know here, you know, sidetracks and different places in the Boys Town area, but you also worked at Starbucks. And so I did want to know, since you work at Starbucks, can you finally tell us once and for all, do you guys intentionally mess up people's names on those cups and just you're messing with us, or you really just can't get it right?
I have never intentionally messed up someone's name on a cup. I get it all the time. I am consistently Jason or Chase. I feel like sometimes people hear the CH and then they just give up after that. So I'm everything Chuck. And, you know, it's a really stressful job. And especially, you know, I worked at the location down on, I believe it was Ohio and State downtown. Yeah. It's, you know, business time. There's tons of people. And, you know, the last thing I want to do is mess up your name and ruin your day. You know, but there are 50 people behind you who need a drink. So, no, it's never intentional. At least for me, it wasn't. I don't know. Maybe there could be some baristas that...
Well, I'm gonna bring some baristas on here. And I know when you do a lot of your Instagram talks and all of that, oftentimes you're in the kitchen. So are you the fine barista of the house?
Oh yeah. I think Pete, I'm very particular about my coffee. Pete would drink like ground up cigarettes and hot water. He like hotel coffee, you know, whatever, gas station coffee. He doesn't care as long as it's coffee.
So let's get to the time when you meet Pete. That comes along later in the book. And actually, you and Peter meet in an online dating site. And I think you got a message from him or you connected while you were working at O'Hare.
Yeah, so I used to take this job with the exchange program that I went on when I was in high school. I would usher these kids around Chicago O'Hare. So I'd usually pick up a bunch of foreign exchange students at Terminal 5. And then I'd take them over to Terminal 1 and 2 and get them on their flights to meet their host families. And I was on Hinge, and one night I had a student whose flight was, you know, delayed. And I was sitting there and killing time on my phone and got a message from Pete, and we started chatting. I was sitting at gate B5, and I don't want to give away too many stories from the book, but eventually, you know, a few years later, every time Pete and I flew through O'Hare, you know, I'd point to gate B5 and we were passing it, like, oh, that's where we, you know, quote unquote met, you know, and then a few years later, that's where Pete proposed.
And you mentioned in the book that you don't really see yourself as a schmoozer, good word to use where I come from growing up in Skokie. but that being said, you're, you know, here you are even prior to being husband, but you're, you know, dating a guy who's obviously very public. He's already the mayor of South Bend. When you connect, you did your research and find that out. Were you ready to get pulled into a public life early on? I mean, one day you're just having a nice date over beers with Peter, and the next time you're hanging with Mike Pence at some event.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I was definitely, I am still the extrovert in the relationship, and, you know, Pete isn't. And some of these events, I felt like such an imposter. I had nothing to say. You know, I didn't know how to schmooze with these people and small talk. And, you know, I'm sure you've been in these rooms where everyone introduces themselves with their business cards. You know, and I, at the time, I was a graduate student and I was substitute teaching in Chicago public schools. And it just didn't feel like, you know, I had anything to offer by means of topics that people in those environments thought would be interesting. And the same thing on the national stage. You know, I sometimes felt like an imposter because many of the people who have been in those positions or have been First Lady of the United States have had years of experience, you know, on top of what I had, and were older than me and much more established than me. But, you know, I figured it out. I learned fast on my feet, and I just did it my way and did what made me feel comfortable.
You also have a theater background. So how much did that come into play? I mean, can't you sort of see this like I'm playing a role right now when I have to deal with these politicians and I'm not terribly comfortable?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, early on in the campaign, people would ask me, you know, what prepared you for this? Or did you ever think that you would, you know, be in these rooms, in these situations? And I would say, you know, I have a theater degree. I can do anything. And they would laugh. But I really did mean it. I mean, I'm very comfortable speaking in front of people, talking to people, getting to know people, being vulnerable in front of people. And that experience in theater. And then when I was in Chicago, I actually did some improv and worked at a comedy club. And I just thought all of those, you know, unique experiences at least gave me some tools in my toolbox to, you know, try to survive in these spaces.
Which comedy club were you at?
I don't know if it's still there. It was in Wrigleyville. It was called Under the Gun.
It was
like a block or two from Wrigley Field. I think they had a big hit early on in their run. They did a show called Comedy Against Humanity, I think. It was like a Cards Against Humanity show, which was a big hit until Cards Against Humanity told them to stop. But it was a fun place to work.
I love it. Well, listen, Chasten, hang with me because there's so much more to talk with you about what your future looks like and some of the past. And, you know, you make sort of coming out and being gay a very simple thing. And we may have some young people listening and it's not so easy for them. So I really want to talk with you about all that. So hang with me, but we're going
to
take a break. And people want to ask you questions. 312-981-7200. You're listening to 720 WGN. And we are back on the Anna DeVante Show. This is WGN TV's Paul Lisnick sitting in for Anna today, and I'm having a great conversation with Chasten Buttigieg, the author of I Have Something to Tell You, a memoir, and the husband of former presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg. If you have any questions, 312-981-7200. So, Chasten, right now, you guys are married, so it's out, but the truth is, when you came out to your parents, your grandmother was a bit of a different story, but it's not the easiest thing, and a lot of young people have difficulty with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was, I just thought it would be, you know, a fact that once I came out, I would lose everything. I would lose my friends, my family, you know, for the first 18 years of life. From what I had learned in my social groups and at school, and people around me, that, you know, being gay was disgusting. It was twisted. It was a choice. It, you know, something was wrong with you. And by the time I worked up the courage to come out, I didn't stick around to see if my parents would accept me. I just ran. I wrote them a letter and I got out of there and I packed my bags and left. Not because I thought that they would hate me. I also just really thought that I would be such a disappointment to them that, you know, my parents are very well known in the community. They have a very prominent small business. And, you know, I didn't want my parents to have to explain to people why they had a gay son. And I thought that would be so embarrassing for them. And, you know, it took time and patience and healing. And of course, now my parents are staunchest allies. I think they might love Pete more than me now, but they, you know, it took a lot of time and healing and it wasn't easy. And once I did come home, you know, it was a lot of, soul searching because they really did, for a period of time, think it was a choice and that something might have been wrong with me. And so did I. You know, there was a lot of internalized homophobia there that I was just taught by so many people that I was not an equal human being.
And in the book, you tell the stories of spending time in Germany and some of the traditions with families. I'm not going to go through all the stories. I think people need to read the book. So let them check it out. But I will fast forward a little bit to your wedding where you did have a concern that one, between the two of you, you were going to be groomzilla.
Yeah, that's totally true. I don't think I was a groomzilla, but I definitely care about details more than Pete does. But I think we did a pretty good job. We had a very clear idea of what we wanted, so I didn't have to Zilla it too much.
Now, I know you once asked him the question that everybody else is wondering. He's not mayor anymore, but you did ask him, like, what's next? Congress, governor, Senate? And I know he said to you, well, I'm the mayor right now. I've got to do my job. But I'm guessing you knew he was ambitious for something, but president probably wasn't in that list you had in your head.
No, yeah. I was uncharacteristically forward on our first date. I asked him about bad dates. You know, say, well, where are you going in life? What do you want to do? Do you want a family? Do you want to get married? Where do you picture yourself? I can see how that might have been a little off-putting, but, you know, I believed Pete when he said, you know, you just don't run for office to run for another office, especially as mayor, especially when it is so personal and up close and local as mayor. You don't get to run for something else if you do a terrible job as mayor, but definitely didn't see president coming.
Would you say that you humanized Peter as his spouse through the process?
You know, that term really bothered me on the campaign trail, because I don't think many people quite understand what it's like to run for president. And, you know, Pete's doing 30 events a day and 20 interviews a day, and you're in four states a day, and you have to answer for every problem in America and every point on your record and think on your feet. And you're answering the same questions 100 times a day, but then you're also told, you know, but be yourself. And I can see how sometimes you get painted sort of into a box or a corner when you're only saying the same things over and over and over again, and you're also not really getting an opportunity to say new material. You know, I'm just out there doing what I'm doing and not under necessarily the same pressures as Pete was. And I think every spouse hears that, you know, you got to humanize the candidate. You get to talk about what makes them, you know, a great partner or a great father or mother, you know, and a leader. And you get to say things that they don't get to say, right? Any presidential candidate that goes out there and says, I'm really empathetic and compassionate and I love my spouse and I treat my spouse with respect and I'm, you know, a devout Christian and I serve my church and my community. They're just not supposed to say those things, because then it seems like, you know, you're a little pompous. And so it's kind of a weird job, right? You are supposed to humanize them in a way, but I also think running for president is sort of dehumanizing that. You, all of those things that make you who you are kind of stripped away from you, especially when people are talking about you on television all day, right? And that's where narratives start to take off, and then it's kind of the spouse's job to come in and sort of clean up their record, you know, in a way. I like that part of the job.
I do have to ask you, look, I know you're no fan of Mike Pence or Donald Trump. That wouldn't be your thing. But you were at an event where he was there as the governor and Pete's the mayor. And, of course, you know, hey, governor and mayor, you have to play along nicely. But you actually said Pence was nice to you.
Yeah, we didn't exchange words. And the thing that, you know, the thing about Mike Pence is he can smile and shake a hand and, you know, he kind of comes off gentle. You know, he doesn't really command a room or, you know, take up a lot of space. So he can, you know, walk around the room and say hi and shake people's hands. And I knew as Peter's spouse, it wasn't my position to tell him what I thought about, you know, his extremely homophobic politics and how they were harming people. You know, my husband had a job to do and he had to work with this person. And I didn't want to make his job any harder. You know, it's not that Mike Pence and I sat down and shared a cup of tea. It was just that, you know, he wasn't a jerk.
So going forward, how do you see it? Because you have come into your own role now. People recognize you on the street. Do you see yourself as having a public duty or role to serve? And I realize now you guys are back home, at least currently for the time. But do you have a role, or is it, hey, I'm Peter's husband?
Yeah, that's kind of the confusing part, right? You know, I didn't realize that the anonymity was just gone. You know, you come home and people know who you are and you know, they show up on your doorstep and they mail things to your house and they share their opinions about you very publicly online or even in person at the grocery store. And I guess that still means you have somewhat of a role, because I believe in the things that, you know, Peter ran on, building a more inclusive and diverse party, a politics where people feel that they belong. And you don't just give up, you know, working towards that goal. And so I want to make sure that I use my platform and my position to do good things, and do all of those things that I still had, you know, had hoped that I would do as first gentleman. I can still do them in whatever position I am in. And so, yeah, I guess that, you know, there is still an expectation that you use that privilege, you use that platform for good.
Do you have a thought? This is a question you won't necessarily be able to answer, but look, I know one of your dogs is named Truman. That tells me you have an interest towards Washington. And Peter himself has said, if asked, he would serve. But is it your thought or expectation that you guys will, in one way or another, be on your way to Washington in a Biden administration?
Well, I don't think it's no secret that Biden has said nice things about Pete. And I think Pete would gladly return to public service if it was offered to him, if he could be, you know, of service to the administration. I think for me, as his husband, I would love to see him do something that makes him happy. You know, I think running for president made him happy. I think serving as mayor made him happy. He felt fulfilled. And truthfully, at the end of the day, I just want Pete to be happy. You know, he's in a weird holding pattern right now, trying to figure out what's next and where he's going. And I guess so am I. And at the end of the day, I just want him working on things that make him feel happy and fulfilled. So, you know, we'll see. And I'll support him in what he wants to do, and then figure out what that means for me as we go forward.
All right. You know, there's role reversal. You're calling him Pete and I'm calling him Peter, but hey, the book,
yeah, it's a weird code switch thing.
Isn't that weird? The book is I Have Something to Tell You, a memoir by Chasten Buttigieg. Check it out. Better bookstores and book sites everywhere. You're in my local bookstore here. I'm happy to see that. Chasten Buttigieg, thank you so much.
Great. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.